It's time for North Shore with Brian French, who's in our studio this morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
It is starting to get buggy. A lot of the rain that we've had has been causing lots of mosquitoes down here, but I understand that you've been up in the Boundary Waters recently.
Yeah, I was up in the Boundary Waters just a week ago, and one of the things that, even when we stopped at the ranger station to get our permit, the ranger said, it is horrendous out there. Be prepared.
Wow. So when you went up with all your gear, did you bring the hat with the mosquito netting around it?
Yeah, I do have a head net. I don't have, I don't have the full bug suit, but as it turned out, the mosquitoes were fine. The black flies were fine. Yeah, and it was a big surprise. I mean, we were expecting to need to either go out into the middle of the lake and just hunker down or go into the tent and hunker down. And neither was required. I mean, we just hung out at the campsite and very few biting insects, tons and tons of insects in general. And it was, I mean, it was unbelievable the number and the variety of insects that were out. But yeah, as far as biting insects, we had a few, but nothing too bad.
I have to say, I feel like that's a relative term. You know, one person's a few is somebody else's swarm.
So I've been to the Boundary Waters for every year for years and years and years, and it's pretty common for us to experience the, you know, that pulse, especially in the evening, right around dinner time, where it's just unmanageable, and it just never happened this year. Yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Now, is that were you there earlier in the season than usual?
Yeah, we were there earlier. And from what we hear, early June is, you might be getting a little ahead of the mosquito hatch, but the black flies are usually quite healthy. And I did see a few black flies, had one noticeable black fly bite, but only one. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So the water levels, were you there before the rain, during the rains?
We were there during the rain, and the water levels were up in general. There was one portage that, I think it was a 100-rod portage approximately, and we only had to portage about 20 rods. yeah, it was amazing. I mean, we just kept paddling and waiting for the, you know, typically you see the little clearing spot where you're going to put in for your portage, and we just paddled right past it and never saw it because the water was that high.
Right up to the grasses. So
oh, yeah, it was, so that was nice. But in general, it was damp, but not terribly so. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it was flooded, and the few little creeks that we went through, they were fine.
Okay, so nothing too rushing, nothing too treacherous.
No. Yeah, nothing like that. Yeah. So, but the Boundary Waters is an interesting, interesting feature of our North Shore, and I thought we'd spend a couple of minutes talking about it today. So, a lot of people have been to the Boundary Waters, but a lot of people haven't. And so the Boundary Waters is actually officially the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. So it is an officially designated wilderness area. It's over 1 million acres, and it's entirely within the Superior National Forest. And that's almost 4 million acres. The Boundary Waters is adjacent, immediately adjacent to the Quetico Provincial Park up in Canada, and that's also 1 million acres. And so when you put the Quetico and the Boundary Waters together, you've got an enormous amount of area that's pretty much completely undeveloped now. Historically, that hasn't been the case, but for the past, since about 1978 is when we had our official designation to move it into wilderness status, which means no development, no human improvements.
So the people that may have already developed there or lived there at the time, have they been kind of grandfathering along, or
It's some of them have, and some of them have been encouraged to, you know, if it depends on the situation, and it sounds like every specific deal was a little bit different. There are still lakes that are up in the Boundary Waters that are where a particular lake is half in, half out. That lake could be motorized with homesteads on that lake, homesteads or home sites or whatever, and you know, because of the Boundary Waters topography and the geology, everything's connected. And so rivers, even though you might be on one lake that's in the Boundary Waters, it might connect directly to a lake that's not the Boundary Waters. And so right at the edges, you do get a little bit of motorized action. But for the most part, you've got thousands of lakes with no motorized, no... they used to have wheeled portages where you could actually carry your canoe on, you know, like hook it up on a little... sled and roll it along a portage, and that's not allowed anymore. They used to have crossbars on the trails where you could rest your canoe as you're going along. They don't have that anymore either.
Why is that?
Basically because you want the wilderness to be in an unimproved, the most natural state that it would typically be in. And by having a crossbar against a couple of trees, that's not wilderness. That's human-made.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So even an earlier improvement like that would just be removed rather than just left to return to nature naturally.
Right. And so the human improvements that do exist are all at the campsites. And so every campsite has a fire grate and a latrine. Mm-hmm. And that's how you know that that's a place where you're allowed to camp. Otherwise, they ask you not to camp anywhere else.
I didn't know about that. That actually kind of makes sense. You can kind of control then where the human activity will kind of focus. If you're going to be a community overnight, you should do it in a designated area.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, and if you don't, then what happens is a lot of people might choose a place that seems like a good idea, but it might be home to some habitat that's been impinged. It might be on some land that isn't necessarily good for camping on. Or what it also does is it controls the flow so that every camper or every group that goes into the Boundary Waters, they sort of spread it out so that I think there are 80 or so entry points into the Boundary Waters, and they spread you around so that they only allow certain entries within each entry point per day.
Uh-huh. That way you don't have one entry with 40 people going in and three other entries with nobody going in.
Exactly, right.
So they'll actually say, no, go down the road, 20 miles and go in there. But
yeah, they've got an online registration system, so it's all set up. It's quite slick. And then as you're about to go in, you'll stop at the ranger station or even at the Duluth Pack store. You can pick up your permit there. And you actually have to watch a 10-minute video that is emphasizing the Leave No Trace principles and ethos.
Great.
Yeah, and what it does is it introduces you to the Boundary Waters, and it tells you that you are going in a place where there's no cell phone coverage, there's no electricity, there's no anything, and so you need to be prepared. It also tells you that you will encounter wildlife, and we encountered an amazing variety of wildlife when we were there. And for the most part, the wildlife is not interested in you. Of course, everybody is familiar with the whole idea of bears coming in and trying to get your food. In all of the years that I've been to the Boundary Waters, I've never once seen a bear. And of course, I know that they're there, but I've had the good fortune not to have to worry about that. So I have seen wolves, moose, beaver, otter, just a wide variety of birds and waterfowl, all kinds of butterflies and insects, and the wildflowers are dynamite, but bear, I have never seen.
Hmm. Now, the wildlife that you have seen, the moose, the wolves, coyotes, things like that, I assume that, I like to think that wildlife has this we'd rather leave you alone too kind of mentality. Unless you, as you say, impinge upon their nesting place, their home, they might get a little testy at that point, but normally they'd probably steer clear of you.
Absolutely. Every time that we've ever come across a moose, for example, unless they're across the lake and we can see each other, but we're across a lake, they won't worry about it. But if we come around a corner and there's a moose there, they will hightail it out of there as fast as they can. Mm. Same with the otters. Otters are funny because they'll sort of do a little up periscope with their whole body, and they'll come halfway out of the water as they're looking at you, and then they'll just go right back down, disappear, and come up way far away.
Kind of like a loon, I think.
A little bit like a loon, exactly. Funny story about the loon. So there were three mergansers, which are, these water birds that are similar to loons, a little bit smaller. Three mergansers were on this little tiny island that was in the middle of the lake. And when I say tiny, it was maybe 2 feet by 3 feet, just a little rock sticking out. And they were just hanging out at this rock. A couple of them were swimming around it. And all of a sudden, we never saw this coming. A loon came up underneath, directly underneath one of the mergansers, scared the pants off the merganser. It squawked and flew off. All the mergansers took off. What was most striking about that was how big loons are compared to mergansers. I mean, you think of them as similar birds, but the loon was easily twice as big as the merganser.
I've had a debate about this with people. Somebody who insisted to me that that a loon is as large or larger than a Canada goose.
Oh, interesting. So body size, I would say they're probably similar, but the Canada goose has, I think the Canada goose is a little more barrel-shaped. Obviously, it has a much longer neck and legs. Interesting. Weight-wise, I don't know.
And again, I've had them swim by my canoe in my lifetime, but never so close that I could really gauge its actual size. And I always feel like it's like the moon. You look at a full moon rising, you think it's enormous, but then in the sky, at the same size, it seems tiny. Is a loon larger than we think it is?
Well, one of the interesting things about loons is, you know, they can control their buoyancy. And so a lot of times, you don't see the full loon on the water. They frequently are hanging very low in the water,
right?
Because they're just coming up and down and up and down as they're going fishing,
like a laden freight ship with the most of their body below the surface.
Exactly. And so what you think is the full size of the loon might not be the full size of the loon. And the other thing about loons is they don't like being on land, and so getting a loon to sit next to a Canada goose.
Yes. Right. Hold there, fellas.
All right, right.
Okay. Have you seen, so it's nesting season for a lot of these birds.
Right.
Were you lucky enough to see baby loons on the backs of their parents?
Yeah, I was hoping that we would, but it was, I think, a little bit too early. We did see some, again, the mergansers were everywhere. We did see a lot of loons, but the mergansers, mostly it was common mergansers that we saw sitting on nests. I saw that a few times, but didn't see any actual chicks. One of the cool things that we did see, every once in a while in the Boundary Waters, there is a lake that's, on the maps anyway, is unnamed. And so we were parked on Gillis Lake, which was inside the Cavity Lake Fire area and the Ham Lake Fire area. Mm-hmm. And so it was burned, parts of it were burned significantly. And there was an unnamed lake just behind our lake. And so we hiked back, you know, through the woods, just basically you're bushwhacking. And we hiked to this lake, and if we hadn't, we never would have seen the moose that we saw. And this moose just happened to be strolling along through the woods, and it just went right down into this little lake. And, it was maybe the size of 2 football fields long and maybe a football field and a half across. Mm-hmm. So not a huge lake, but enough. And the moose just went down into the lake and just swam right across. But this is something that we never would have seen had we stayed at our campsite. But because we went back into the back country and, you know, tried to go seeking something fun, we were able to find it.
Well, I suppose that most people think of it as being mostly a water traveling experience where you park on land overnight and then get back in the canoe.
Right.
But what you're saying is use your campsite as a sort of a hub for a spoke for land hikes, too, to go from place to place.
You can. So they have a few trails, and we were close to the Kekakabik Trail, which is a trail that runs east-west. Mm-hmm. And so the hiking trails in the Boundary Waters are not as well maintained as the canoe trails, as the water trails like you're describing.
And are they few and far between?
Few and far between, indeed. Okay. And so we weren't actually on a hiking trail. We were just going through undeveloped country altogether. But yeah, you absolutely can. And I think that you find some pretty interesting things. I found a gray tree frog that was just, I mean, it looked like a piece of granite. You couldn't even tell. I mean, there was something that caught my eye, and as I kept looking, I'm like, that doesn't look like the rock, and went down up close, and you could see that it was breathing. Its lungs were going in and out, but it was, I mean, it just had that sort of lichen-y color, and it had that, it looked like a piece of granite stuck to the piece of granite that it was on.
I think a lot of people in the Duluth area take for granted that we're living in something very integrated with the natural world, but perhaps the Boundary Waters really gives us an even deeper look, and those opportunities just don't appear, you know, in your backyard in Duluth quite the same way.
Not in the same way. And the nice thing, too, about being in the Boundary Waters and having these experiences is that you're already pulling yourself out of your normal day-to-day routine. So you don't have your phone that you're checking. Well, hopefully you don't have your phone that you're checking. I love being up there because hours can go by with no one saying a word, because you're just thinking about the experience that you're in instead of thinking about, well, I've got this meeting coming up and I've got this, that, and the other thing. You're able to slow down and enjoy the world for what it is. And it's pretty cool, too. As you're up there, you think about historically who's been here in the past. And, you know, you can think relatively recently, some of the loggers, or a little bit farther back, you've got the Voyageurs, or even further back, the Anishinaabe and the Ojibwe people that were living in this area and who used the Boundary Waters as one of their homes. And thinking about all of the historical stuff that's been going on, and you're walking or paddling among it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty special.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the burned areas that you're in where the fires have been recently. They're not doing any controlled burns in the Boundary Waters.
There are some places where controlled burns do happen. The places that we were in didn't have that. It was interesting. When we were at the ranger station, the ranger who was checking us out was telling us that she was surprised we were going into this area because a lot of people disparage the burned areas because it doesn't have that classic, beautiful Boundary Waters appearance. Mm-hmm. Which I think that if you're only looking for that, then you're limiting yourself. So the burn happened maybe 8 years ago or so. Has it been that long? The balsam poplar that were growing were about head height for me, and they were just so lush and green and verdant and everywhere. It was everywhere. So it was cool because typically you see tall trees, but because the trees had all fallen down, because they had all burned, you got to see the topography of the land with these really small saplings. Hmm. And so you got to see these enormous boulders that normally would be completely covered, but here they were. And you could see the shape of the land in a way that in the Boundary Waters, you never get to see. Normally, you just see green in the summertime, of course. But, you know, when you're there after a burn, you get to see all sorts of things that normally you would not get to see. And there were parts that actually reminded me a little bit of the Southwest. You know, it was just that dry, beautiful landscape. I mean, beautiful in a different way, but yeah, no less beautiful.
I think about the controlled burn idea versus the, as you say, there were loggers there a century ago. And is there an attempt in the Boundary Waters to let it restore itself to sort of a natural old growth kind of a landscape?
Yeah, the controlled burns typically happen in places where there might be, you know, for example, when we had the windstorm in, I think it was 99.
And the big blowdown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that they're trying to do some targeted control burns in areas like that, but only during certain periods of time when it has the least impact on the, you know, large number of travelers who are out there. So it might be early in the spring or late in the fall that they'll do some of those controlled burns. But in general, most people that are traveling to Boundary Waters wouldn't see something like that.
So people who are thinking about taking a trip up there, they've got to plan ahead. As you say, there's some preparation, there's some understanding of what you're getting into. Do they need to think about other things now as they go?
A typical permit to get in is relatively inexpensive. It's $16, and so that's nothing in the grand scheme of things. What I would say is if you've never been to the Boundary Waters and you want to get out there, one of the easiest ways to do it would be to get in touch with one of the outfitters. And there's Sawbill Outfitters, or there's the Gunflint, or there's Tuscarora. There's a lot of different places that will get you all set up with your gear, with a canoe. They'll even get you set up with food. And so that's a really easy way to get out and experience it with relatively little inventory of your own. And then basically all you have to do is go out for a night, go out for a couple of nights, and start to enjoy it. It's one of those things that you start small and you just build as you start to develop your skills and your interest and your abilities. And I would strongly encourage anybody get out and just give it a try because it's really special.
So you don't have to do a 14-day canoe trip your first time in.
Absolutely not.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Great stuff today. Thank you. North Shore, Brian French joining us today talking about the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Funding for North Shore with Brian French is provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Legacy Fund.